In the heart of Canada's great outdoors, where fishing is more than just a pastime, it's a way of life. There's a brewing company that strives to represent the true essence of Canadiana.
Introducing the Ugly Pike Brewing Company, born from a passion for celebrating the moments that define us as Canadians.
Founded by Christopher Walter and Frank Ungaro in 2022, Ugly Pike Brewing Company is more than just a brewery. It's a tribute to the timeless tradition of fishing passed down from generation to generation.
Crafting a crisp and easy drinking beer, they honor the angler's commitment to the environment with a zero waste philosophy.
Just as campers, cottagers, and anglers care for the places they cherish, Ugly Pike Brewing Company makes every brew with sustainability and environmental stewardship in mind.
Head to uglypikebrewing.com today to order online or use our interactive retail location map.
How's the grind?
Good job, buddy.
The Hunt for Answers, the Ugly Pike Podcast.
All right, welcome back to the Ugly Pike Podcast on the Outdoor Journal Radio Podcast Network. This episode is brought to you by Izoco, Canada's exclusive haven for pike and muskie enthusiasts. Dive into a world of hand-picked premium gear at izocofishing.com. Discover top quality equipment curated just for you. Again, that's izocofishing.com. Today, Frank, we are broadcasting live from an undisclosed location nestled in the Great Lake Water System. Known for its phenomenal muskie fishing this time of year, why don't you take it away and introduce our two guests and where you're at?
Yes, it rhymes with Schmary. And our two guests right now are friend of the show, my buddy, people that hear the show have heard Attila's name before. He's one of my main fishing buddies, one of my main training partners, my pal Attila, and of course, owner of Barbarian Braid, the braid company that took the muskie world by storm, and of Taxman Lures that you can't get anywhere, Alex Boutin, also known as Rex St. Pierre.
Awesome.
How's it going?
Just so you know, every time I would pass by the studio, Frank would always refer to you as the savage guy in the dojo there, that you were the savage. So I'd always look and be like, yeah, I could see why he's an animal when I watch you roll in there. My kids were doing the jiu-jitsu for a while in the studio, and you were referred to as the savage. So, you know, that means you're a tough guy.
To put things in perspective, he's a 190 pound.
No, he's not.
Jiu-jitsu purple belt.
You're not
190.
No,
180 maybe.
He looks 180
on a full stomach.
Pretty close. Yeah.
180 pound jiu-jitsu purple belt with extensive boxing experience and life experience from the post USSR. Western Europe, Europe, right?
Eastern Europe.
Eastern Europe, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Really, Europe. I'm from Budapest, right? So, I was born and raised. I came here to Canada when I was 23 years old. And life experience is coming from, you know, working at the door as a bouncer from 1996 until today's day. So, definitely life experience come from there.
But and, Chris, Attila's turning over a new leaf. He's the jiu-jitsu smooth, controlled artist and not the savage guy anymore. So he's trying to work on a new image. So let's help facilitate that.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll keep the savage to the boat. He's a savage muskie angler.
Hey, he was the only one who caught last night. So
Yes.
Yeah. Chris, I sent you that picture. We were extremely happy to get here. You know, the first day is a lot of travel, right? So Attila and I drove 6 hours-ish, 7 hours-ish to get here. And, you know, Alex has a bit of a shorter trip being from Quebec. And so it wasn't a full day. And a lot of times I think mentally we write that first day off and we don't have expectations. And
yeah,
you know what? Yesterday the line screamed and it was Attila's rod and he brought the fish in perfectly. And it was a great start. So you know what it's like, Chris. Day one, you get a fish, the pressure's off, and the trip becomes fun, right?
Yeah, I was just gonna say, anytime you get a fish on the first like part of your trip. That pressure is off and you know that like good things can happen. And it's happened to us before where, geez, man, when it's at the end of the trip and you still haven't caught, you know, the stress levels are a lot higher. So congrats on getting that fish to start. And I'm excited today. I'm excited to talk to Alex as well, because he's just, you know, such a wealth of knowledge, the tactician, as I call him. So, I mean, let's dive into this. And I think, Frank, I wanted to ask you guys, because you're coming back to a place where you didn't have as much success as you thought last year or the year before, or I can't remember the exact dates, but like, what do you feel like now? Do you feel like everything is kind of, you feel confidence again, or do you feel like you're still, I mean, you did catch the fish, but like, what's your feeling on the location right now?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Let me tee you up, because I know you want to answer this, Alex.
I mean, like, you remember what you were saying too? I think it was were really worried about the place wasn't going to be what it was at that high point.
Yeah, and it hasn't been. Like, the first couple of years we've come here, we did really good. Coincidentally, last night we were talking about our past trips, and every single trip we've taken occurred exactly 2 years ago. In other words, we're having trouble discerning what happened 4 years ago and what happened 2 years ago. So everything was 2 years
or one last year. It was 2 years ago.
I think the last two outings up here were lackluster, yeah, and the previous two were actually pretty good. And we can talk about the fishery a little later on, but the fish we caught was nice, but not huge. So in that respect, we're not complacent. But the fact that we got a bite yesterday, I'm super optimistic about today. What about you?
Again, not absolutely certain about what's happening, because muskies will humble you, but the results we wanted, we got yesterday. And thank God we were able to do a no skunk party on the first evening.
Yeah.
And the fish did exactly what I wanted them to do based on previous year's patterns that were following without negotiation kind of thing.
Yeah. And we stayed away from
optimistic. Yes.
Yeah.
Fully satisfied. No, but I think that's me, never fully satisfied. Optimistic. Yes.
We stuck to our pattern, and we even deviated, because we have a second location that pays off for us at night that we stayed away from yesterday and kind of went with your gut, stayed at location A, and the line screamed, and Attila brought in the fish. What did it feel like to, it's been a while, eh?
Yes, absolutely. Well, it's definitely, you know, I was nervous, and it's been a while since I caught a fish. I almost forgot how to do it. But luckily, I landed it, thank God. Otherwise, probably Alex would have thrown me in the water. And it was the pressure off for sure, and it was exciting. And one of my favorite parts is when I let the fish go, when you put it back in the water and you just say goodbye to it, and you see it nice and the fish swims off nice and strongly, and that's my favorite part of it.
Yeah. It's a good release too.
They're
crazy to fish at this time of year.
Exactly. It's my favorite part too, is the goodbye, especially when you got a big fish and your nose to back and hanging over the gunwale. I mean, you know, we all know the feeling. So, big victory last night. Feeling good going in today. We have amazing weather. The sun is shining. We're going to hit 12 degrees at the high today. We have a little bit of water, a little bit of wind, not too much, enough to make the fishing good. And today, when is our Explore and Adventure Day? That's tomorrow, right?
Likely, yeah.
Yeah. So tomorrow, Kristen, the reason why I asked if we could do the show today is I think tomorrow we're going to do a little more exploring and bring food in the boat and just not come in. So thanks for accommodating us. And
No problem.
Yeah. So we're gonna shift our tactics, you know. And fishing is dynamic, and we got here and we looked at the weather forecast and the patterns and everything, and we had to kind of improvise on the fly. And let's hope it pays off for us.
Speaking of weather, I mean, that's always one of the biggest challenges fishing in this time of year. We call it, like, I guess mid fall or approaching end of fall or late fall. I mean, I remember the last time we talked, Alex, specifically with you, there was some tactical issues or some gear issues that were affecting your fishing. And it sounds like tomorrow that won't be a factor, because you're going to have great weather. But I guess the challenge is always how you can keep fishing while you're protecting yourself from the weather, the environment, and staying safe. So maybe Talk to us a bit about some of the lessons you learned and what you've prepared for this trip that, you know, you feel are essentials, let's say, on fishing in these type of weather conditions that can change at any moment. It might be great tomorrow for the first part of the day, and all of a sudden, you know, something blows in and you guys are freezing and you're in the middle of the water and, you know, you got to adapt.
It could be wrapped up. The answer to that question could be wrapped up as, and feel free to stop me if I start rambling, Chris. I want to answer your question directly. I'm a good rambler. the answer to that question could be answered as my biggest lesson of last year, and we'll call it last year, even though we couldn't figure out if it was last year or 2 years ago. But
I think it was last year.
So Attila said that he was nervous reeling in the fish. And the reason for that is because last year,
There's no way that was last year.
No, no, it doesn't feel like it.
I said
last year in the question. Maybe maybe it was 2 years ago.
I'm going to call it last year because it was such a depressing failure of a shit show. And I'm being it. I'm not being fair to us because
you're being fair. We lost four or five fish.
We got six bites. In 40 degree water, and we landed one, and I don't think it hit the 40 inch mark. So when Attila says he was reeling in nervous, it's because last year we watched two fish get off of Attila's rod, and I spent the entire trip and the rest of the fall and part of the winter trying to figure out what did I do wrong, what did I do wrong, what was wrong with my gear, right? And
or your setup.
Yeah, my setup, my gear, my rod, my my hooks, my baits, my drag. And over and above that, the last day, my boat motor just gave out. So you're on the Larry. The current is deadly. The wind can be literally deadly. Like somebody dies on those big water systems every year, whether it's the Ottawa or the Larry, somebody dies because the wind picks up on a small boat. Now, we've got a bigger boat, so that's not such a big deal, but my motor gave out. We tried to race to the marina. We begged the people at the marina to look into the boat. We assumed it was my impeller because I hadn't changed it in a couple of years and it wasn't spitting as much as it could. And that turned into 3 or 4 hours having beer while desperately waiting for the marina to call back. And it turned into the marina charging me $1,000 to change my impeller. So basically I got robbed at a $600 from the marina. So my boat failed me. My rods failed me. My hooks failed me and I failed me. Right. So when we're talking about a shit show and just constant failures, that's what I learned last year. Be better prepared so that this doesn't happen. So from the boat perspective, I went home, asked around to my network of friends, who's the best boat mechanic around. They sent me to a gentleman in Saint-Jean-sur-Richelieu. And whereas one bad boat mechanic charges you $1,000 to change your oil in your, change your oil and change your impeller, because in my motor, you got to do both. This guy charged, and also they plugged the motor on a computer and the computer said there was a fuel float system problem. And the marina quoted me $4,000 to replace the entire fuel pump system in my motor. So I drove around heartbroken. I thought I was down $5,000 or whatever. Ended up calling a bunch of friends back home, found a mechanic. And the mechanic ended up taking apart the fuel system, cleaning it in front of me and charged me $160. And kind of laughed at me and socialized with me while it was happening. And I asked him, what did I do wrong? Am I not maintaining my boat right? He laughed at me. He goes, if you don't want this to happen to your fuel system, just leave your boat parked in your driveway. So I didn't do anything wrong, but
opposed to leaving it in the water,
as opposed to running it, right? If you run it, you're going to get a dirty gas system. So guys, if you have a 2013 115 horse Mercury, expect it to need a cleaning of the gas system at around the 350-hour mark. So my motor's not old, but it needs that maintenance. And if you have the right mechanic, he could take it apart. There's pumps and there's floats. He could take it apart very comfortably in front of you, shoot the shit with you, and get the job done in like an hour. So after that guy proved to me he was such a reliable ninja and basically fixed my $4,000 problem for $160, I bought a kicker from him. I straight up bought a kicker from him that day. So I bought a 9.9 Merc to put on my boat.
So it cost you $5,000.
It cost me $4,000. But the thing is after I had always been told by really, really seasoned guides, the day your boat breaks down on a big water system and you're stuck with clients or with two kids, you're going to put a goddamn kicker on your boat. So yeah. So I wanted to buy that I needed the kicker for safety purposes. And now I'm glad I have it because I'm always in the boat with my kids. And I kind of wanted to buy the loyalty or show my appreciation to the mechanic that fixed my problem. And I felt like I was kind of getting a free kicker because the other clown was going to charge me $4,000 to do something that didn't need to be done, right? So the value of a bad mechanic versus a good mechanic. And that mechanic also, it was the end of the season, so he gave me like $700 off that kicker too. The kicker was a fantastic deal. And I had been shopping for kickers for months, so the kicker was an amazing deal.
Was it a 9 or a 15? What did you get?
Nine because my boat is a 17 and a half foot low, and the low could only take the 9.9 comfortably without kind of a few other changes that were not suited for the boat. And again, when he talked about it, you could tell it was the 10th time he did that to that boat. So I took his advice.
Chris, I have a question, and just getting back to set up and the troubleshooting the failures of the last season and stuff like that. I fished with Dave Anderson at the tournament on the French River. I just did Unleash the Beast. And he said when he trolls, he actually has a couple rods that he points straight back. And one of the reasons, I'm sure Dave will get in touch with me and correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think I am, is that it takes the recoil out of the strike. And that made a lot of sense.
I remember him talking about that in the show, I believe.
Did he talk about it on the show, Chris? Maybe that's what it was.
I think so.
Now I feel better about talking about it because I wasn't sure if he said that to me in confidence or not. But that made a lot of sense to me. Rod's pointing straight back, so when the fish hits, there's no, boing. There's no back and forth. There's no recoil. So,
and you got to imagine, Frank, like in conditions where it's very cold, that pressure on the rod might have more stress than if it was in the middle of the summer. I don't know the mechanics of the fishing rod but if you're stressing that rod from a strike when it's, minus 5 degrees or minus 10 degrees and it's a violent strike, there might be a higher chance of snapping that rod than if it was in mid-July.
It was 20 degrees colder when we were here last year than it is this time. So yeah, that could be the case. Yeah. You never know.
That fits right into the next few things I learned last year, and it fits into the changes I made this year. So last year we used Attila's 8 foot Sojourn, and it was X heavy, very stiff rod, right? And at the end of that rod, we had very thin 2-aught hooks, and we lost two fish to hooks that got straightened out.
2-aughts.
Yeah, 2-aughts. Yeah. So last year, I tried to fiddle to kind of, we took the Sojourn out of the spread, right? So no more stiff rods in the spread. When you're trolling, the fish sets the hook on itself. When you have a really stiff rod and a pretty tight drag, because you want the hook to set itself, if that whole setup is too tight, if it's around like the because our trolling reels can be tightened up to 14 pounds or something. So if your setup's at around 11, 12 pounds, you will straighten out certain hooks. You won't straighten out a Mustad 7-aught or a Mustad 8-aught, 9-aught. But when you get into the 3-aught, 2-aught, anything under 5-aught gets tricky. VMC makes a good 5-aught, but anything under 5-aught gets real weak and tricky. Now, if you're long lining, you need everything to be tight, but you also need a hook that can take the beating of everything being tight. And then you can't have a hook that's too thick with wire that's too thick or a hook that's not sharp, because that'll affect the fish getting hooked up also. And these are discussions I had with kings in the muskie industry, right? Because I was kind of that last trip really put me in a pickle kind of thing. I was mad at myself. So this year we've got 2-aught hooks that are much stronger. We're using rods that have more flex. We're using a tight drag, and that first fish that bit our gear made it to the boat. Last year, I had also
made it. It was hooked like crazy.
Yeah, yeah, it was.
Like,
yeah, and the net was hooked. And so, yeah, so again, 2-aught hooks, but that are 2X strength, sharpened. Like
we were bending hooks last year.
Yes, yeah. We bent. That's why we changed hooks on the last day. So last year we changed the hooks out on the last day, and we landed that fish on the second to last day. The last day was the boat problems. So you need strong hooks. You need bend in your rod, and you need a tight drag.
So for listeners, Alex, is that like we're not an XXX heavy? We're like a heavy rod, like a medium heavy action.
Okay, so. Let's say we're using Chaos. Right now right now we've got 2 Chaos rods in the spread, and we've got 2 Barbarian prototypes that we're rotating. So yesterday we had 1 Barbarian and we had 2 Chaos rods.
Hang on. You should explain that they're Barbarian, just in case anybody missed it. Those are Barbarian potential to market Barbarian rods, or what are you doing?
Okay, so I've been and this is terrible. The reason I started working on Barbarian prototype rods late 2022, right? And the reason why I wanted Barbarian rods was because I felt there was a hole in the Canadian market. And I love my Chaos rod, right? So
me too.
So that's it. I love my Chaos rod. And I'm like, we need some like that are accessible in Canada. And all of a sudden this year, Chaos rods are accessible in Canada, right? So if you look at all the online Canadian retailers, or if you go to the Odyssey, you will find Chaos rods, right? So
Izoko has them, right?
Yes, Izoko has them. Yeah, Izoko has them. So, so I started working on a rod, and what I was trying to work on was I wanted a rod that was tough as shit, Barbarian rod. So I figured out a prototype that had fiberglass in the blank, and I've been using those. I've lent some of those rods away to guys that catch a lot more fish than I do, and I've used the rods myself. So we had one of those rods going yesterday. And I know that the 8-footer has a good bend, and I know that the 8-footer is tough as shit and has a real seat that will agree with our salties. So I'm still running those Barbarian rod prototypes, but the Chaos rods are tried and true, so I'm not taking them out of the spread this year because they worked in the spread last year and worked in the spread before that, and I've caught giant fish with those Chaos rods. So yeah, so we're using Chaos heavy trolling, and I can't explain the bend. You need to hold it beside your other rod, and you need to just push it onto the floor and see what the bend is. But it would be less stiff than any casting rod you own. So it would have a bit more give in the tip than any casting rod that we own. But it would still have a very strong backbone, right? And I did a silly test with a Barbarian 7-foot prototype, and I basically lifted 60-pound Wes off the ground with the rod. So even though the tip of the rod has bend, the backbone of the rod is still there. I want to say to bulk flip a 50 pounder, but that's just a silly statement, right? That's why I put Wes at the end of the rod to say, here, you can lift a 50 pounder with that rod. But you want flex in your trolling rod. And the reason for that is when you're bringing the fish into the boat, you want the rod to do the work. You don't want your reel to do the work, and you don't want your line to do the work. Attila yesterday
Let's get Attila to give an insight. So Attila, you're rusty, right? Because we haven't fished a lot in recent years. So tell us what you were doing, and now that you have hindsight, what you would have done differently.
And not even that. I used to fish for carp all the time. I like carp fishing for big fish, and my carp rod is a 12-foot carp rod, and I fished down in the Niagara River, Lower River at the Gorge, and some of those fish are huge, get into the current. So it's a big fight. It's a good fight. So you're basically pumping with your rod. So you pull the fish up with your rod, and on the way down, you reel. And I haven't done that for so long. I pretty much forgot how to fish. So when I had the muskie on, basically I was just having the line tight And I was reeling the fish in like an idiot. And instead of pumping it, instead of using a rod to fight a fish, I was using a reel. So luckily, I was able to, I mean, we were able to land it, but yeah, that's a big mistake. So at least now I will know it for today and then the rest of the day, that the rest of the trip, that do it properly. But yeah, that's a big mistake. And
Chris, it was a little tense too in the boat, just because last year was so aggravating for all of us in terms of the fish we lost. And so,
yeah, but
you know, I think there was a lot of pressure in the boat to get that thing landed, you know?
To Attila's story there. I mean, we all know when the fish hits, everything gets thrown out the window.
Yeah.
Like it just turns into chaos. And if you're lucky enough to land it, you know, maybe you did everything perfect or maybe you didn't, but as long as that fish is in the net, you don't care. Right. But you know, Frank, we've seen so many times where when the fish is on, you see just the craziest things happen. People stepping on hooks, things getting caught, you name it. We've seen it. So, you know, just a little seems pretty good.
But you see, the chaos should be controlled, I think. And I was fishing down from a catamaran down in Cuba, and we got a barracuda, and I was all exciting, and I was going nuts and everything. And the guy, he just told me, okay, relax, calm down. and that's actually, I think, a very good point. And I can relate it back to jiu-jitsu, too.
You should have kicked him in the stomach.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Low kick, falls off the catamaran.
So I think we should be all trying to stay calmer and have a controlled chaos instead of everybody losing their shit and then just everybody, you know, or people stepping into hooks or you know, bumping each other. So I think staying calm as much as you can, I think it's crucial to execute the landing properly.
We did okay yesterday.
Yeah,
it was tense, but we did.
Yeah.
I think we kept our shit together. Especially since, honestly, like, we were not expecting that fish to hit.
No.
You know, I'm driving the boat and I hear the line rip and I look back and Alex looks at Attila.
Yeah.
And Attila looks at Alex and I look at the both of them. I go, that's a fish.
Yes.
And then nobody moved and I went, that's a fish. And
I agree to that statement. I still don't know what happened. I looked at the rod and it was bending over like crazy.
Yeah.
And I went and picked it up
and
said Attila.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And thanks Attila for like the tame way to tell me to not go nuts in the boat.
You said
that? No, I said that just everybody should calm down.
Oh, okay.
I'm like, yes, I should calm down.
No, I'm not saying personally.
I'm teasing.
I was shouting too. Like when that fish was at the engine, I couldn't reach it. And
I had to pull the rod tip up.
Yeah, rod up, which is communication is key.
Yeah.
Communication is key in the boat, you know, and one of the summer we were out there fishing and then how you were telling me that hold the net, you know, so don't have that
hold
guard.
The bag of the net.
Hold the bag. And then, so communication is key and loud, clear communication. And that's not what I'm saying, but you know, everybody's running around and everybody should know what your purpose and job when the fish hits. And then if you know your role on the boat and everybody is relatively calm, but still excited, obviously, then I think the success of landing the fish is way greater than everybody's running around and nobody knows what to do. You know what I mean?
I agree.
That's what I'm trying to say.
I totally agree. Frank, could we say that the level of chaos is proportionate to the amount of time between when you've caught your muskie? Because
that's really insightful.
Yeah.
I would agree with that.
I'm remembering this summer, Attila and Alex, this summer, Frank was on fire on Nipissing and you know, he was on his third or fourth fish. And then I hooked into one. Frank's on the phone and he's just like, he's on the phone. He's like, I gotta go. There's a muskie on, right? Like it was just, he was so calm because he's already landed four fish. He didn't care. And then, you know, I'm nervous as hell because it's like, this is my chance. And of course I lost it. But you could just tell Frank, if we hadn't had anything that entire trip, you wouldn't even have been on the phone, let alone say, he's got a muskie on, you know, like, so I think there's a relationship there in terms of how long it's been between your fish, that level or that tension or that chaos just rises and rises, especially if it's a trip saving muskie. It's hard to control yourself, but Attila's bang on that, like the best thing you could do obviously is to remain calm and try your best to just keep focused and that'll increase your chances. But anyways,
I think the other thing that made me casual was that every time
my buddy Mesh would call me, we would get a fish on. That was the second time he called me. And as soon as I picked up the phone, someone said there's a fish on. So that was just funny coincidence, I'm sure. But yeah, I mean, there's no doubt the longer you wait in between, you know, it's just that excitement that we all feel. And so, you know what? We should be cool as cucumbers today. We'll see. I think what's going to happen today or tomorrow is we're going to get a rip. I think we're going to get a big fish. I feel it. I'm confident. And I think everything goes out the window when you have a rip like that. So I'm excited to see if we can pull that off and what that's going to be like for us. So.
The Ugly Pike Podcast.
Do you know the name of Canada's one and only specialized pike and muskie shop? It's Izoco, and it's an Esox angler's paradise, offering the very best in hand-picked, top-quality gear, from bait casting to fly fishing, and even specialized Scandinavian tackle. Izoco's staff will provide expert advice and top-quality service. But Izoco is more than just a store. It's a community of passionate anglers that make up the Izoco tribe, and they're always ready to share tips, swap stories. So head over to their shop in person or online at izocofishing.com and let Izoco turn those fishing trips into epic stories.
What do football, hockey players, boxers, and fishing guides have in common?
A love for the outdoors.
I'm Jamie Pastilli, a fishing guide with a lifetime of experience chasing down some of North America's most sought-after species with some of the world's most interesting characters. On Outdoor Journal Radio's Tackle Box podcast, I'm joined by one of those people, CFL legend Brad Sinopoli, as we share stories and talk to the athletes who found their passion through hunting and fishing.
World heavyweight champion Tyson Fury, they brought you in to spar this big animal.
I had a rod, so I just randomly brought it to Colorado. It got me hooked up on some beautiful fish in those big rivers, and it was some of my best memories of during my hockey career.
So join Jamie and I every week on the Tackle Box for a behind-the-scenes look at some of your favorite athletes and angling personalities.
From hits to tangles, passes into angles, the Tackle Box has your sports and angling listening covered.
Find the Tackle Box now on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever else you get your podcasts.
So on the gear talk, like Alex, you know, consider you probably an expert on the line kind of aspect. What would you recommend is the ideal type of line pairing in the cold conditions? The strength, the color, is that a factor? The diameter, like explain to us what your perspective is on what type of line you should pair with your trolling activities at this time of year compared to maybe in summertime. Or if there's no difference at all, then let us know.
It's going to be a terribly boring answer. And the answer is
Power Pro?
Yeah. Actually, yeah.
That's a boring answer.
The answer is that use the line that you have patterned, because the right now our pattern is on Barbarian 150, and if I try to get 150 gold, and if I try to get Barbarian 80 gold bit, I can't for the life of me trolling muskies in the fall, and I'm trolling tiny baits and big baits because I just don't have a pattern. I don't have a perfect depth, a perfect rod in the right spot in the boat.
Yeah, but why would the line test affect that?
How deep your bait dives will depend on current, will depend on speed, will depend on how much line you have in your reel, and will depend on line diameter. Okay. But line diameter is the smallest factor out of all that. So if we're trolling a specific trolling line that we've caught fish on before, the wisest thing is to have a reel that's filled exactly the same as it was last time, right? So that means put new braid on your reel early fall. Don't put new braid on your reel.
With 100. Why?
I pulled Joe 150.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought it was the red pack.
Oh, you're right.
It was
Barbarian 90.
That's sabotage me so I don't get a fish.
No, they have the same. They have a very similar diameter, the 90 and the 150.
All right.
And the reason why I've got 150 on my trolling rod is because I was testing 150 the last time I had an amazing fall, and I'm afraid to change my pattern, but it's the same diameter. Chris, you were asking me how line affects.
I was asking if it affects, like, would you change your line for trolling muskie in winter or late fall or mid fall or colder conditions than you would in the summer? And is the color an issue at all, or none of those things matter? It's just how to get the optimal relationship between the bait and the line. Is that the key?
Yeah. So depth of your bait is the biggest factor. If I know both the 90 and the 150 have a very similar diameter, I know I will get the same depth out of any bait I use. In the summer, I'm trolling blades. Depth does not matter. My trolling rods all have 150 all year long, and which is considered overkill by some people, and I don't disagree with them. And I fish clear water and brown water, tea colored water, and gray is my color of choice because it's only color my braid has, and it's my braid company.
But we've had so much success on it.
Yes,
it's proven itself.
But in the past, I've never been the color of line has never been a factor for me in Eastern Ontario on the Ottawa.
Used to run rainbow color line.
Way back when.
We were testing the Barbarian braid early prototypes. That was rainbow, Chris. So we'd have blue and orange and all sorts of stuff in the water, and that's when we were crushing.
Yeah. So color not a factor. Color not a factor, period. I wouldn't even consider it.
A lot of the trolling lines have the multicolor for the yardage too, right? So maybe then probably the least amount of concern is the color of the line. But it's just something I wanted to get your perspective on.
Yeah. We've got line counters for that. When you have a line counter, you don't need the line with yardage, right? We're all using line counters now.
And I just bought a Takoda, and I started using it this trip. I was in London at Angling Sports. Guys, if you're in and around that area, check this shop out. It's amazing. Huge multi-species fishing paradise. I walk in there, or I take a beating to the tune of whatever it was, $400 or whatever a Takoda cost. Man, Chris, this reel is awesome, man. I can't wait for you to use it. It's
10 foot per crank or something.
Oh my God.
Feels like 10 feet per crank.
We got a bait out 100 feet, and I'm working the rods, and I'm like, Alex is like, bring the rod in. Usually you're like, oh shit, man, like just a few cranks and that thing's at the boat. What a beautiful piece of equipment that is.
Nice.
So now, two Dakotas this year for the long line.
They are two Dakotas for the long line. They're the high gear line counter.
Yeah. And they all, like Alex is saying, we all have line counters. So, no issues with the braid. God knows we tested it long enough. We tested it for what, 2-3 years?
Yeah.
And
it does not fail.
It doesn't fail. We haven't had a single failure. So, it's going well.
And your connection to the bait is still a Palmer knot, or are you using anything different in the winter or in the colder conditions? That's what I use.
You mean the leader?
To the leader, sorry, yeah. Are you using a Palmer knot?
I use the uni knot that you put twice inside your leader. So guys, look up uni knot, but I want you to wrap your line twice inside the swivel or whatever piece of metal you're tying the leader onto. But that my go-to leader in the winter is a 4 to 6 foot fluorocarbon 100-pound.
Are you crimping
leader? It's crimped, yeah. There's no knot, but he means the knot, the braid to the leader. Yeah, so the fluoro's crimped. And then these are Chandlers. Dadson makes Chandlers with a spinning blade at the front of the leader.
Yeah, I know those well.
Those are the ones I've been using with confidence for the last couple of years.
Yeah, what was the logic behind that? It was that it almost looks like the crankbait is chasing
a minnow.
Fish.
Yeah, your bait's chasing a minnow. Yeah, and stats wise, it has proven a necessity.
Yeah.
But again, have I caught 3,000 fish in the last 10 years? Hell no. So I might be fooled by coincidence. But stats wise,
we're all running.
Like yesterday, it bit it bit a Chandler yesterday, right? Like it ate the lure being with a little blade in front of it.
I feel better with it on my casting and my trolling setups. I like them.
Yep.
You know, it's all about confidence. So, and it's putting fish in the boat. It's working for us.
All right, where you want to go next, Frank? I mean, I think we covered the gear. I mean, I don't know if there's anything you want to touch on in terms of your protection for the weather. If there's like, I know you had a boot issue a couple of years ago, Alex. If there's any insights you want to give us other than that, maybe we can move on to understanding what these musky are doing at this time of year.
Just wear warm boots. Didn't you guys all you forgot your boots?
Definitely.
A warm list. Gear. Make a list before you go, right?
warm gear, definitely. It's a must when you're out in the water in this kind of cold weather. And then last year, I didn't have that. This year,
and you almost forgot them this year.
Yeah, this year, I almost forgot my boot. And then last year, it's a big shout out to Mike Binding that he hooked me up with the Mustang survival suit for a good price. So I have it this year. It's definitely a game changer to be properly dressed up. And that's about it. Gear is important to keep you warm and dry.
And safe.
And safe, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, having a life vest or a floating suit is definitely a must. Especially when you're in the dark and cold water, right?
When dark comes around, you don't want to fall into 40 degree water without a vest on and expect your buddies to find you instantly.
Not a good idea.
You don't want to do that.
That is part one of our talk, Fall Patterns on the Great Lakes Systems. Stay tuned for part two coming up shortly. Thanks for listening.
The Ugly Pike Podcast.
What brings people together more than fishing and hunting?
How about food?
I'm Chef Antonio Maleca, and I have spent years catering to the stars. Now, on Outdoor Journal Radio's Eat and Wild podcast, Luigi, Hookset, and I are bringing our expertise
and Rolodex to our real passion, the outdoors.
Each week, we're bringing you inside the boat, tree stand, or duck blind and giving you real advice that you can use to make the most out of your fishing game.
You're going to flip that duck breast over once you get a nice hard sear on that breast. You don't want to sear the actual meat. And it's not just us chatting here. If you can name a celebrity, we've probably worked with them. And I think you might be surprised who likes to hunt and fish.
When Kit Harrington asks me to prepare him sashimi with his bass, I couldn't say no.
Whatever Taylor Sheridan wanted, I made sure I had it.
Burgers, steak, anything off the barbecue. That's a true cowboy.
All Jeremy Renner wanted to have was lemon ginger shots all day.
Find Eating Wild now on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever else you get your podcasts.
Do you know the name of Canada's one and only specialized pike and muskie shop? It's Izoco, and it's an Esox angler's paradise, offering the very best in hand-picked, top-quality gear, from bait casting to fly fishing, and even specialized Scandinavian tackle. Izoco's staff will provide expert advice and top quality service. But Izoco is more than just a store. It's a community of passionate anglers that make up the Izoco tribe, and they're always ready to share tips, swap stories. So head over to their shop in person or online at izocofishing.com and let Izoco turn those fishing trips into epic stories.